From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This afternoon in New York, Martha Stewart was convicted of lying to investigators about a suspicious stock sale on all four standing charges. The verdict was guilty. The jury rejected Stewart's argument that she had no direct knowledge of insider trading in ImClone Systems stock and decided she had acted to cover up the trades. She's facing prison. Her media empire teeters on the brink tonight. On Point, the Martha Stewart verdict is in. We ask, is this the big gavel coming down on white-collar crime? Is this justice for Martha? But first, bad news on the employment front. U.S. employers added 21,000 jobs in February, far fewer than the 130,000 jobs economists had forecast, and fewer, too, than the January gain of 97,000 jobs. The unemployment rate held at 5.6% as more Americans simply gave up looking for work. Greg Ipp covers the economy for The Wall Street Journal. I asked him how bad today's news was.
This is a very disappointing report. For months now, people have been saying the economy, it's getting better. Everything is firing on all cylinders. The jobs are just around the corner. And they keep not showing up. That corner keeps getting further away. You know, I think there are two explanations. One is that, it's just a matter of time. The other explanation, which is a bit more troubling and that we have to now consider, is that there is something structurally broken going on in the jobs market.
Such as?
The first thing that springs to mind is that the outsourcing phenomenon might be costing us more jobs than we realized. But perhaps more important is that there's just something to the corporate mentality today which is much more willing and able to replace people with machines and just do things differently. The problem isn't sales. Sales are very good. In fact, if you just looked at gross domestic product, the economy is doing very well. The issue is that companies seem to be able to meet all those sales without people, or at least not without the people they needed before. Partly it's because information technology has enabled them to do so, but there's obviously something about the mentality which has made them much more dedicated than ever to trying to find a way to do this without adding to their payrolls.
Greg, remind us just how far short of what's needed in job creation this 21,000 number last month is.
Okay, just to keep the unemployment rate steady, Tom, and that means to create enough jobs to keep up with the number of people who are always entering the labor force for the first time, you need probably at least 150,000, maybe 200,000 jobs. And we haven't hit that kind of job creation on a steady basis in over 4 years now. And ordinarily, at this point in the recovery, you would. I mean, the 91, 92, 93 recovery was called a jobless recovery, but it wasn't as jobless as this one.
But in the 80s and 90s, when the economy was growing at the current rate, in the end of last half of last year, 6% growth, 6.1, we were creating a quarter million jobs a month.
Yeah, absolutely. As I said, there's nothing wrong with the rate of growth of the economy. It's very good right now. It's that we are able to produce these goods and services with fewer workers than ever before.
So how is unemployment holding steady? It's 5.6% again. If we're creating so few jobs, why isn't unemployment growing?
I'm afraid that we don't have a very encouraging answer for that. As best as we can tell, the people who cannot find work are just dropping out. And if you're not looking for work, then you're not counted as unemployed.
This 21,000 number is so far short of what the Bush administration was talking about. In October last year, Treasury Secretary John Snow said, we'll have 200,000 new jobs a month over the coming year. It's way beneath that. How big a problem is this for the administration?
This is a big problem for the administration, Tom. I mean, the conventional wisdom is that once the economy turns up, it's going to take 9 to 12 months for it to really register with voters. That means that the president basically needs the economy to turn up tomorrow if it's going to help him at the polls in November, and it's just not happening.
Not happening by a long, long shot. So what are the options now? Does the president have levers that he can pull? If you're sitting in the White House, what can you do?
I'm afraid at this point he really can't do anything. The traditional answer as a politician when you look at this type of weak job creation is, well, let's go spend some more money. Let's go cut some taxes. But we have a deficit this year that's already on track to be a record $521 billion. There is no more money. Congress is looking for ways to cut spending, and there's certainly not much appetite for cutting taxes again.
All right. What about Alan Greenspan then at the Fed? Is there anything he can do?
The federal funds rate at 1% is already the lowest it's ever been in 45 years.
The interest rate, that is. That's
right. I will tell you this much. I don't think there's any doubt that this weak job number means that whenever the Fed was thinking of raising interest rates, it's a lot later today than it was last week. So I think we can look forward to this period of very low interest rates for a while longer. And that will help. It will encourage people to refinance their mortgages. It may encourage some people to buy more homes. That will help the economy.
Greg Mankiw, chairman of
Bush's counsel and economic advisors said today that we're not satisfied. But he went after Senator John Kerry, the Democratic nominee apparent, saying that if the country followed Kerry's advice, that is, raise taxes again on families making more than $200,000, that it would only weaken the economy further. Is it as simple as that? Is that so obvious?
It's not that obvious. I mean, we just cut taxes on rich people, and it doesn't seem to be helping the economy a lot. So it's not necessarily the case that raising taxes on them is going to kill the economy. But I think the truth is a little tougher for both Kerry and Bush than that sentence implies, Tom. Mm-hmm. The truth is there's not much that either party can do about that situation out there. It's a big, complex economy, and there are things going on that none of us really understand. There are things going on that Alan Greenspan doesn't really understand. It changes in the way we trade with other countries, changes in the role of technology, changes in things, the way we pay for health insurance. And all these things are intersecting in a very difficult and complex way. I'm not really sure that any president is going to have a magic bullet that turns the situation around.
And meanwhile, a lot of Americans sitting hoping to heaven they don't lose their job, and many others not finding the jobs they need to get back into wage earning. Greg, I've got to ask you before we let you go, because we're talking about it tonight. Martha Stewart,
yes.
Big conviction today.
Yeah.
What do you make of this story?
Well, Tom, it's obviously the first of the principles to be bagged, as it were, in the long series of scandals left over from the go-go years of the 90s. We have a lot of big ones yet to go. You know, we've only just seen Jeff Skilling, the former CEO of Enron, indicted. We've only just seen Bernie Ebers, the former CEO of WorldCom, indicted. It's going to be a while before these things are all out of the way. But I think the real question is, what does this mean for the economy and what does it mean for investor confidence? And my feeling is that it doesn't mean anything. You know, the truth is, Tom, that the time to find and stop this scandal was 3 or 4 years ago, before it resulted in the stock bubble and all the resulting pain
and not just Martha Stewart, but all the shenanigans.
Oh, sure, exactly. Yes, the whole internet bubble, the WorldComs, the Enrons, and all that. I mean, I think it's certainly going to make a lot of people satisfied, speak to our need for Schadenfreude, as it were, to see some of these people finally get their comeuppance. But will it help the economy or the market at this point? I don't think so. It's way too late for that.
A horse is well out of the barn, but no fun from Martha Stewart today. Greg Ipp, it's wonderful to have you right here with us. Thanks for joining us.
Tom, it's a pleasure.
Greg Ipp covers the economy for the Wall Street Journal. He spoke with me in our studios in Boston. For Martha Stewart, life fell like a souffle today. The high priestess of Home and Garden was convicted on 4 counts built around obstructing justice. She could face up to 20 years in prison. She was convicted of a white-collar crime at a moment when the nation is white-hot to punish uber-rich business tycoons who play fast and loose with the law. Tonight on Point, the Martha Stewart verdict and what it means. Simon Criddle has been covering the Stewart trial for Time magazine. I asked him to describe the moment in the courtroom when the verdicts came down.
Well, the jury had just filed in. Martha and her lawyers and Peter Bukonovic had taken their seat at the defense tables. It was very fast. The judge said that the jury had reached a verdict, and almost immediately she started reading them out, count by count, guilty, 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 on all counts for Martha Stewart and for 4 of the 5 counts of Peter Bukonovic. I can say that Martha showed very little emotion. It was quite surprising. We all expected some kind of courtroom theater, but really she just sat there quite defiantly, stony-faced even. Peter Bukonovic, though, looked quite crestfallen. I mean, all day he looked distraught even. I think the most outstanding moment, though, just after the verdicts were read, was Martha's daughter, Alexis. Her head went down into her hands, and she sort of sat hunched over for quite a few minutes.
And, Simon, what about the jury itself? How did you read their expressions?
Well, I watched the jury very closely as they came in. I mean, I figured that if they looked over at the defendants, that we might have an acquittal, but not one of them looked over. They basically stared straight ahead. I saw them come right through the door. They took their seats, and that was it.
Simon, remind us of the basics of the allegations here, of the situation around which this case was built.
Well, but, you know, it started in late 2001, December 27. Martha Stewart sold almost 4,000 shares of ImClone. The allegation was that was based on information that she'd given by her stockbroker's assistant, Douglas Faneuil. Faneuil had learned that the Waxels, that is Sam Waxel, the CEO of ImClone, who also happens to be a friend of Martha's and shared the same stockbroker, that Sam Waxel and his daughters were selling all their shares. So the allegation was that Martha got this information and acted on it. She sold her implant stock. And then when the FBI and the SEC started to investigate this, basically they say that she conspired with Peter Bukovnovic to cover up the reason for the sale. She claimed that she had an agreement with Peter to sell when the stock reached $60. But the government said no. They saw because of the inside information, and ultimately the government was proved right.
Simon, we're reading today that Martha Stewart now faces the possibility of up to 20 years in prison. Of course, there can be all kinds of bargaining and negotiation. The sentence is due June 17th. What's the word about what she might expect in terms of a prison term?
Well, look, it's impossible to say. The way they measure this is in a very, very complicated system. It seems likely, almost certainly, that she will go to jail, but she won't face the maximum. That's 5 years for each count, 20 years in total. She won't get that. They take things into consideration, such as does the person have a prior criminal record? Now, of course, she doesn't. So it looks very unlikely that she'll do anywhere near the maximum time. But look, I think any time at all in prison obviously is completely shocking for these defendants. I don't think they ever expected it, and today that's happened.
Stewart and her attorneys say they're planning an appeal. When will we learn more about that?
We heard some more about it just now. Robert Mavillo said that he's going to appeal this immediately. That's Robert Mavillo, Martha's lawyer. They're going to fight vigorously, and they believe, as you would expect a defense lawyer to say, that they will be victorious in that appeal process.
If it doesn't pan out for her, if the appeal doesn't work, if she goes to jail, where's that jail likely to be? Is there a particular place that this court sends convicted folks like Martha Stewart?
Well, she was convicted in federal court, so go to a federal prison, a federal penitentiary. It could be anywhere, though. I mean, there are federal prisons in upstate New York, in Pennsylvania, where Sam Waxall is. He was convicted of selling his Implone shares. He's serving 7 years right now. But, you know, it's anyone's guess. That sort of stuff is a long way down the road.
And, Simon, what about Martha Stewart's demeanor throughout this trial? We've only seen her coming in and out, and she always looks perfectly put together. Not only the way she's dressed, she looked pretty well put together in her facial expression. What's been her demeanor inside the courtroom?
Look, her demeanor throughout has been quite stoic, even defiant. I don't think she really believed that she belonged there. It was very difficult to read, though. Obviously, she never spoke to us. She never testified. The only things we were able to sort of look into our crystal ball and think of what she's thinking is by what she was wearing. And that was, constantly this sort of endless procession of black pantsuits. Sometimes she'd wear a jacket, or even she wore a bright orange one day. But, yeah, I mean, there was very little demeanor from her at all. I think, at the end there, I saw her stand up, and she finally turned around, flicked her hair to the side, and to me, she just looked defiant.
Defiant throughout. What do you think was the turning point in this trial, Simon?
Well, I spoke to one of the jurors after the trial. Just after the verdict was read, a guy called Chappelle Hartridge, and he said the most compelling testimony for the jury was the testimony of Anne Armstrong. Anne Armstrong, of course, was Martha's secretary, someone who was very, very loyal to Martha throughout. When Anne got up to testify, she actually burst into uncontrollable sobs, and then went on to explain how Martha had deleted a very incriminating phone message off Anne's computer screen. Now, that to the jury, I think, really was the final nail in the coffin. Also, of course, there was Peter Bukovnovic's assistant, Douglas Faneuil. He was the insider. He was the one that did the trade for Martha. He was the one that spoke to the Waxalls that day. So, obviously, his testimony was crucial, but it was corroborated by these other people.
Simon Criddle, you've been watching throughout and watching closely. What's the human lesson that you take away from this story?
Look, I'm just an impartial observer, but I think as the juror said and as the U.S. attorney here in the Southern District of New York said, that if you break the law and you lie to federal investigators, they are going to come down on you. And the thing is that I think the real winners in this case are the little guys, the investors, the people who suffer when the stock market goes into turbulence. They lose money. They lose their 401ks. They lose the value in their stocks. And now someone who was a very big player in the stock market has been brought down, and that's a good thing for us little guys.
Simon Criddle on a cell phone in a taxi in Manhattan on his way back to the Time Life building. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Simon Criddle has been covering the Martha Stewart trial for Time Magazine. He spoke with me from New York. You can join our conversation tonight. We're looking at the Martha Stewart verdict. Has justice been served in Manhattan today? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Martha Stewart verdict, guilty on all counts today in New York, and what that verdict means. You can join the conversation tonight. Has justice been served in Manhattan today? Does Martha belong on the prison chain gang with Sam Waxel, Andy Fastow, his wife Leah, and maybe soon Bernie Ebers? Was she a target because she did wrong or because she's a famous, successful woman? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I am joined tonight from Palo Alto, California, by Robert Weisberg. He's professor of law at Stanford Law School. Good evening and welcome, Robert Weisberg.
Good evening. How are you?
Wonderful. Thanks for being with us. Also tonight from Philadelphia, David Skeel, professor of corporate law at the University of Pennsylvania. Good evening and welcome, David Skeel.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to both of you for being with us. Robert Weisberg, to you first. There's been a lot of controversy about the very fundament of this case. The Wall Street Journal wrote, "The essential Stalinism of this charge is worth marveling at. Though she is not accused of a certain crime, that is insider trading, she can be threatened with jail for asserting her innocence." On that day, December 27, 2001, there were 7.7 million shares of ImClone stock sold. She sold 3,928, but she's a celebrity. Is that why she's convicted today? Was this worthy from the get-go?
Well, you can argue that the government ultimately got to the obstruction charge only because they were going after her unfairly on either insider trading or securities fraud.
Which they never charged her with.
Well, they never charged her with insider trading, although I suspect the prosecutors do think she was involved in insider trading. They tried an extremely creative, shall we say, securities fraud charge, which the judge ultimately dismissed.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, though, that what the jury convicted her of is some fairly specific stuff about lies to federal investigators, destruction of the phone log, and also conspiring to help Mr. Bakanovich perjure himself before the SEC. Now, it's true that if you believe that the entire basis of the prosecution, you know, was just unfair and too aggressive, and I think that's a fair point, then had the prosecution acted more fairly towards her and had a better sense of proportion, we would never have gotten into the position where she might have lied. Nevertheless, she certainly had a chance to avoid lying. And indeed, it's a little misleading to say that she was merely protesting her innocence. That might have been true with respect to the securities fraud charge that was dropped. But the problem is, when questioned by the investigators, she didn't just say, "I'm innocent." She said, "I didn't do X or I didn't do Y," you know, fairly concrete things. And the jury obviously believed that those statements could be proved demonstrably false.
David Skeel, bear with me while I just go through a little bit of a timeline here to remind people of who this is. Martha Stewart, 1941, Polish-American family. She's what? She's 62 now. 68, she passes her brokerage exam, which becomes important later in this trial. She's registered with the New York Stock Exchange. 73, leaves Wall Street, moves to a Connecticut farm, launches a catering business, and then comes her first book about entertaining, 1987, her Kmart contract, 1990, Martha Stewart Living the magazine, 93, television series. 99, she takes Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia public, a big deal, and she buys in December of that year these 3,928 shares of ImClone. Now, fast forward, December 27th, 2001, she, I guess, gets a signal that Sam Waxel, who's the man behind ImClone, is dumping shares because they're not going to get government approval of a big cancer drug. She gets this word, we're told, and she says, "Well, sell my shares." Is that wrong? Is that insider trading?
It sure looks a lot like insider trading, and I can understand why a lot of people see this verdict as a victory for the little guy. She clearly had access to the kind of information lots of us might like to have access to but don't. But it's not entirely clear it was legally insider trading. It's not entirely clear exactly what information she had. And my feeling is that this whole thing has been overblown, and that the amount that she made on this trade was an awfully small amount to justify such a massive prosecutorial effort.
She saved herself $51,000 on that day in the same year that she became worth, I don't know, close to $1 billion when her company went public.
That's right. And I'm not sure what the moral of this is. I think as likely as not, people are going to end up being sympathetic to her. And when you think about all of the resource constraints that the SEC has and the U.S. attorneys have, it's just hard to justify spending all this money and all this effort on this prosecution. I have to say, I sort of hate to agree with the Wall Street Journal on this, and I agree with Bob that their specific points are quite debatable, but I'm not so sure whether this was all worth it.
I guess a specific question there, Robert Weisberg. If someone like Martha Stewart owns shares in a company and she learns something that informs her big time that the value is going to drop, if she's not an officer in that company or an employee of that company but acts on the information anyway, is that insider trading?
Yes, it can be if she is what we call a tippy of a tipper. That would have been the insider, Mr. Waxel, or if she somehow obtain the information by what they call a misappropriation. She didn't have to be an insider herself. She simply had to have some illicit pipeline to the information.
So that was enough to justify the charge?
Well, it would have been. I mean, the problem the government must have faced was whether she really heard the inside information, or more important, whether even if she had heard it and was tipped onto it, whether that was really the reason she traded. Obviously, her argument, or one of her arguments was, even if I heard the inside information, it was irrelevant. It didn't cause me to sell the stock, because I had the $60 stop order, which was going to kick in automatically anyway.
Well, the government clearly was going to go ahead with this, and they did roll ahead with it. Maybe they were so eager to show they were cracking down on white-collar crime because it clearly was a huge problem, or maybe they just had a celebrity too delicious to ignore in their lap. David Skill, what were the key points then in this trial? Why do you think the jury came out the way they did?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm the best person to answer that question. I have to say I was really surprised at the verdict. I wouldn't have been shocked if they had returned a guilty verdict on one of the counts, but on all of the counts really was a surprise to me. My speculation is simply that they felt like she had done something wrong. It really seemed that she had lied about why she traded, when she traded, and they felt like she ought to pay. I really think this is a common person's verdict that sort of, as one of the jurors said, it's a victory, or perceived as a victory for the little guy. That's my best guess.
Yeah. The juror, Chappelle Hartridge, said, this was a victory for the little guy who loses money in the market because of this kind of transaction. It sends a message to bigwigs and corporations. They have to abide by the law. No one is above the law. Robert Weisberg, whatever the fundamental merits, do you think this will be successful in sending that message? You've got to follow the straight and narrow, no matter how big you are.
With due respect to the juror and also to your reporter earlier, Mr. Criddle, I think that's the wrong message. But on the other hand, if the wrong message is what gets around, then that'll be the effective message. The problem was that, I hate to be legalistic about it, is that she just wasn't convicted of any securities crimes. The more appropriate message would be, look, you know, people wind up in front of federal investigative authorities for all kinds of reasons, sometimes when they've done nothing wrong, sometimes when they have done things wrong, but you don't lie to investigators. So the appropriate message is this is a victory for prosecutors. When they question you, if you don't want to talk because you have a good reason not to talk or a privilege not to talk, don't talk, but don't lie to them. Unfortunately, though, the stand up for the little person message may get out there.
Well, the New York Daily News said she did not know what every low-level hoodlum in Bensonhurst knows: you don't talk to the cops. If she had just clammed up, would there have been any case here?
Maybe not. I mean, she would have, assuming what the jury said is correct, had she said nothing, first of all, she was never under oath. She could have just said, I'm sorry, I don't want to talk to you. She wouldn't have even had to pull the fifth.
Right.
And second of all, of course, she would have had to avoid doing something to the phone log. But, yes, it does seem that she, whether through innocence or hubris, didn't follow the street guy's advice.
But next time, when someone of Martha Stewart's stature, or just anybody who's that invested, gets this kind of tip, what should they do, Robert Weisberg? They know, on the basis of a tip like this, that the stock price is going to go down. Should they just stand there and let the train run over their stock?
I defer to Professor Skill, the corporate expert on that, but I think the answer is if you know what you have is inside information, you can trade, period.
David Skill? Yeah.
There's a simple rule of thumb that the SEC uses, and it is your obligation is to disclose or abstain.
Right.
You either disclose publicly the information that you have that the rest of us don't have, or you don't trade.
Listeners, we're talking today about the Martha Stewart verdict, guilty on all counts today in New York. What do you think? Has justice been served up today in Manhattan? And were you rooting for or against Martha Stewart? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Anne Marie is calling from Fitchburg, Massachusetts. Hi, Anne Marie. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm actually in my car on my way to Kmart.
And why?
Well, I intend to spend as much money as I possibly can on some Martha Stewart products that maybe I don't even need. I just think this is just a bunch of hooey.
What do you think? What do you think it's about, Anne Marie?
I think it's about. I think it's a really kind of a selective sexist prosecution. I think that Martha Stewart got a little too big for her britches somewhere along the line. You know, she just became a popular target for lots of people who are angry at women who are powerful. And I just think it's so silly and a huge, huge waste of public funds.
I see how you get to she was a big shot and a big target, but how do you get to sexist? How do you see anger against women in this verdict exactly?
Oh, I just think that they really wanted to knock her down a couple of pegs. I mean, honestly, what did she do? She made very little money on this. I think this probably happens every day, all day long. And they just decided that she was someone that they wanted to make an example of. And I just think it's ridiculous.
And so you're on your way to Kmart to buy a Martha Stewart sheets and maybe a can of paint.
Oh, and a couple of cans of paint. Maybe I'll paint my whole house because I just love this thought that, well, her stock's going to take a dive and, you know, this is going to hurt her. Well, they can put her in prison all they want, but, you know, it's women that buy her products, not men.
Well, there's one woman headed to the store. And, Anne-Marie, thank you very much for your call. David Skeel, what about it? I mean, this gets a bit beyond your immediate purview, but this idea that they just want to knock her down a couple of pegs. Can you see how sexism could flow into a prosecution, a verdict like this or not?
Well, I can see the story. I'm not sure if I'm fully persuaded, but one way of looking at it is Martha Stewart is very confusing to people. She is a woman who's been an extraordinarily successful entrepreneur in a traditionally male kind of way, but the way she's made her money is through a traditional women's kind of role with household furnishings and things of that sort. And so she's very confusing to people and I think very threatening to people. So I understand the story that it is a sexist prosecution. I'm more inclined to think of it as a sort of bigger than us or a celebrity prosecution. I don't think it's just because she's a woman, but I think it is because she was a celebrity and a celebrity that is kind of known for being or thought of as somewhat self-righteous or somewhat casting judgment on the rest of us.
Holier than thou, neater than thou, more glorious at home than thou.
I think that all kind of plays into it. And of course, she had the misfortune of engaging in this behavior at a time when we were really taking a look at the celebrity CEOs and the celebrity corporate people in our culture.
And a lot more to come on that front. And Robert Weisberg, what about Anne-Marie's other point? This happens every day, I bet, she says. Does this kind of thing happen every day, or did it in the late 90s, early part of this decade? Will a verdict like this change the behavior of big stock traders?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, there are so many insider trading prosecutions, including some that are going to send, you know, some gentlemen to prison for a long, long time, see Mr. Skilling, Fasto, et cetera, that the Stewart verdict itself, you know, would be pretty much irrelevant to all this, even if it were a securities fraud prosecution.
Now, why is that? Because there are bigger cases going on, you're saying?
No, or? Well, yeah. I mean, it's not, again, first of all, she wasn't even busted for that.
Right.
Second of all, though, I would defer to Professor Skeel on the question of, you know, how much insider trading really goes on. I think the SEC has probably been pretty effective in deterring it. But you would think that what would deter potential malfactors here is not the possibility that Martha Stewart is going to go to prison for a year, but the possibility or the probability of the certainty that some other people are going to go to prison for many years on absolutely clearly demonstrable insider trading. So, yeah, I think insider trading prosecutions probably are very, very usefully deterrent. That may have very little to do with Ms. Stewart, though.
Lenny is calling from Meadville, Pennsylvania. Hi, Lenny. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I have to say that I was rather pleased when I was very surprised, but also pleased when I heard of the verdict today.
Let her have
and,
it, huh?
And I think it's very just, regardless of the technicalities of whether she really committed insider trading or just how low the offense was or the transgression was.
Okay, why?
Well, I'm of the mindset that you do something wrong. She's a smart person, and you make a decision to play a little fast and loose or close to the edge, and you should be aware that it may come back to sting you. She got caught on it. She had the opportunity to be straight with the prosecutors,
right?
And as one of your guests pointed out, if she had done that, or if she had just not said anything, she probably wouldn't be in the position she is now.
So you're going with the juror's idea. Hey, let's send a message here for the little guy. You big folks can't just trample the grass and get away with it.
Well, here's the thing: is that when a big guy, or in this case a big woman like that, it attracts a lot of attention and the message gets out loud and clear. And I don't think that was a bad message to get out today.
Maybe at the end of that era it wasn't. Lenny, thanks a lot for your call. David Skill, I guess I put the same question too. I put to Robert Weisberg. How widely do you think this will put up a cautionary message for other people with the resources and the kind of inside dope to be tempted to do what Martha did?
Well, on the cautionary message, I'm a little bit worried about the implications. One of the ironies, it seems to me, about this is they didn't have to go after her criminally. They could have brought civil charges for insider trading against her, and they didn't. And the effect of this is it suggests that they may be able to get people on criminal charges, but it's not clear whether they'll be able to use the insider trading civil charges to bring people to justice. So one perverse message you could take away is unless you're somebody that they're going to pay special attention to, it's very hard for the government to prove insider trading, and that in a lot of cases, people at the end of the day may actually get away with it.
Wow, there's a thought. And Robert Weisberg, what about this sentencing? June 17th is set, and we know there's an appeal here, but 20 years possible. You mentioned a year, and other people have as well. If she doesn't win an appeal, what kind of sentence would seem reasonable to you?
Well, you know, the sentencing guidelines for obstruction of justice run in the 1 to 2 year range, depending on some details. And she was busted on a number of counts, but the judge will do what's called grouping, because if most of the counts, even though they're technically legally separate, are really about the same conduct or same, you know,
it's the lie.
Series of pieces of conduct, then they're going to kind of get grouped. So I think between 1 to 2 years is a reasonable guess for what she'll get as, of course, a first offender.
And how likely? Do you think she'll win on appeal, or is there any way of
I don't even know what the arguments are going to be on appeal. I can imagine some, but I don't see anything very, very dramatic. Oddly enough, one of the things that hurt her, as some have said, is that even though the judge dismissed the securities fraud count, and that obviously helped her, she dismissed it too late, and that might have deterred Stewart from testifying. And maybe she could have helped herself by testing.
In her own defense. Robert Weisberg, David Skill, stand by. We're talking tonight about the Martha Stewart verdict. You can join the conversation. Has justice been done today? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Martha Stewart verdict. Guilty on all counts today in New York about that verdict and what it means. You can join our conversation tonight. Does the fact that Martha Stewart is a famous, successful woman have anything to do with today's outcome? What does Martha Stewart stand for to you now? Will you keep buying her magazine, her products, her advice, even if she's in the slammer? What's the moral of the Martha Stewart story tonight? We're at 1-800-423-8255. Let's listen to just a little bit of U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, David Kelly, saying the truth came out in the trial today.
When we first indicted this case, we said that it was about lies. It was all about lies. And as you saw in the evidence, that's what it was. Lies to the FBI, lies to the Securities Exchange Commission about very important matters.
U.S. Attorney David Keel in New York today. Martha Stewart, convicted. We're joined tonight from Philadelphia by David Skeel, professor of corporate law at the University of Pennsylvania. From Palo Alto, California, by Robert Weisberg, professor at Stanford Law School. And right now from New York by James T. Madore, business reporter for Newsday. Good evening and welcome, James Madore.
Nice to be with you.
It's wonderful to have you. Give us the impact on Martha Stewart, living OmniMedia. Does the corporation survive the conviction?
Well, a lot of the people I've spoken to today who study the company are very concerned about its future, because even though in the last 2 years they've tried to introduce other people, other experts other than Martha, The fact is the company is really still Martha Stewart. It's built around her ideas, her image, her face on the merchandise and on television, and people are very concerned about the long-term viability of this business.
James, the stock was sneaking up today midday on expectation that she might be get off. She didn't get off. What happened to the stock later in the day?
Yes, actually, it plummeted. In fact, it lost about 20% of its value. Then trading was halted. It did continue to fall. It did rebound a bit, although it did close down $10. It closed down to $10.86 a share, which is a drop of $3.17 from this morning when trading began.
Is there some kind of, I don't know, there's legal justice. What about cosmic justice here, James Madore? Was the idea of a publicly traded company built entirely around one person in itself a kind of 1990s absurdity that one way or another was going to run into trouble?
Well, it's important to remember that Martha Stewart's company began before it went public in 1999.
Well, it's one thing to be a private company, but a publicly traded company built on one person?
Well, there are other companies out there that are also built around one person. For example, if we look at Oprah Winfrey and her vast business empire, which is very successful.
Private, not publicly traded.
Right. But at the same time, the fact that it's a publicly traded business and it's built upon one person isn't that big of a deal. You, as an investor, make a decision. When you buy the stock in Martha Stewart Living OmniMedia, you know, number one, that the company's built around Martha. Number two, that over 90% of the outstanding shares are owned by Martha Stewart herself. So you have very little control as a shareholder when you vote at the annual meeting. So if Martha wants to do something with this company, Martha's going to get to do it because she owns 90% of the voting power.
Okay, let's say Martha Stewart goes to jail, and it's gingham curtains and all the rest. I shouldn't make light of that. Let's say she goes to jail. What happens to the company?
People today said that the company is going to have difficulty surviving because it has to find a replacement for Martha in terms of at least the television show. People feel the magazines will probably survive because the ideas in the magazines are of value to consumers. In terms of the merchandise sold at Kmart and specialty stores, it's also very possible that that will survive. But the issue is, can this company be competitive without Martha? If all they're doing is selling commodities, is that enough?
If she's up the river for 18 months, instead of 20 years, survivable?
Well, another key issue here is how much Martha's role is in the company. The fact is that, yes, there are 550 people who work for Martha Stewart Living OmniMedia, and many of them are very creative. But it's Martha's vision. It's Martha's ideas. If Martha can't communicate on a regular basis with her company, that's going to be a major blow. No one I talked to today said, though, that we should think Martha Stewart Living OmniMedia is preparing to file for bankruptcy or that it's going to fade away. They have $167 million in cash on hand.
Mm-hmm.
They have no debt. So this is not a company that we should be writing off immediately.
Martha Stewart said today in a statement she put on her website, she said, "I appreciate all the words of encouragement I've received from thousands of supporters. It is your continued support that will keep me going until I am completely exonerated." And maybe she will be on appeal, but if she's not, James Madore, can you imagine her writing her magazine column from the jail cell?
Well, Martha Stewart continued to remain very involved in the business during this whole trial. We need to remember that there's an example here from a few years ago, and that's Steve Madden's shoes. Steve Madden also was convicted in a Wall Street-related case. And Steve Madden's shoes, Steve Madden's designs, are still very popular at your local mall, and teenage girls and college women and young working women continue to wear Steve Madden's products.
Not to mention, Michael Milken, you can come out, I guess, and have a second time around. James Madore, David Skeel, Robert Weisberg, please stand by. A lot of callers want to join us. I want to invite them in. Eric is calling from Boston. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Hi. My comment is on the theme that keeps coming up, that there's some unfairness to the fact that Martha Stewart was in this position because she was a celebrity, because she was successful, because she was a successful celebrity woman, for that matter.
It's an unavoidable question. What do you think?
I think that while it might be unfortunate that while somebody who's in the spotlight is more likely to end up in this situation, I don't think it's fair to make the case that there's an unfairness to it. Maybe you can make a case that that there are tons of athletes using steroids, but only the ones in the major leagues are going to be caught. I see it kind of in a similar sense, where if you're in the spotlight and that's the reason that you were the one being prosecuted, then that's not really your argument. I welcome a discussion on whether or not there was wrong done, but the argument of whether or not it was fair that she was prosecuted, but other people aren't, I think that's frustrating.
Eric, we've got it. James Madore, we've put that to David Skeel and Robert Weisberg. What's your view? What's the buzz in the business community? Is she being seen as being singled out because she is so prominent as an individual, as a celebrity in the business world, or not?
Some people in the business world do feel that she ultimately found her way into the old federal courthouse in Lower Manhattan because she is a celebrity. However, many other people say that the federal government wanted to send a signal about insider trading, and this was the case they felt that would do it. And many people in the business community today are absolutely shocked that she was convicted on all four counts. Robert Mervillo, her attorney, is very respected in the community and is well known for getting people off. So there's a lot of shock that this is actually happening, that we're talking about Martha Stewart going to jail, whether it be for less than a year or more than 3 years. The fact that we're at this point today is considered amazing in the business community.
Do you think that this conviction, whatever the merits and the details, do you think it will lead business leaders to pull up their socks, to walk the straight and narrow more righteously than before?
Some experts I've spoken to said yes, they do think this sends a powerful message. They also say, however, that the Regas trial, the upcoming trials we're going to see because of Enron, the Tyco case, all of these cases have already produced reforms in corporate America. And if we just look a few days ago, Michael Eisner's situation at the Disney Company, the Walt Disney Company, is also giving chief executive officers pause. So all of the corporate scandals that have taken place in the last few years, and there are 7 corporate scandal trials that will take place this year, are having an effect on how business is done in this country.
Let's hear what the juror, Chappelle Hartridge, had to say today about the outcome of the Martha Stewart case.
Maybe to the middle investor, they may feel a little bit more comfortable that they can invest in the market and not worry about these type of scams where they can lose their 401ks or just lose money on any plain stocks.
There it is, Chappelle Hartridge today after the jury had spoken. David Skeel, do you see Martha Stewart as belonging in this pantheon of huge cases that James Madore is talking about here? Enron, Tyco, WorldCom, Adelphia. Is she rightly seen in that company?
Unfortunately, I really don't think so. I think the other cases really do send a signal about corporate behavior and about cleaning up corporate America. I really just don't think this case sends that signal. We've been talking about how maybe this will signal that the government is going to crack down on insider trading. I just keep having to come back to the fact that she wasn't even charged with insider trading. And so it's just not clear to me that there's a direct, useful signal being sent at all.
And not the same scale. Beatrice is calling from Viroqua, Wisconsin. Hi, Beatrice. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Yes, hello. I'm one of the little people they're talking about.
Me too, Beatrice. What do you think?
And I have a strange feeling. I think the government is run basically by Republicans, and Martha Stewart is one of the biggest contributors to the Democratic Party. Do you think this political connection might be one of the reasons that she got nailed?
Let's ask our guests. I honestly don't know about that. Beatrice, thanks for your call. James Madour, is that right? Is she a big Democratic contributor?
Frankly, I don't know if she's a major Democratic contributor. I would say, however, that few people have raised the issue that your caller has raised, that this is politically motivated. More people have said they believe this case has been brought because Martha Stewart is a successful woman and that she's a celebrity. I've heard very few people say that this case was brought because of Martha Stewart's political orientation.
Just hasn't come up. Damon's calling from Arlington, Massachusetts. Hi, Damon. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, sure.
I wanted to address a comment that one of your speakers made and also one of your callers regarding the role of the SEC. The SEC is a very small organization given the size of the task that they have. And I believe that there are two potential cases that they might try. One would be one in the case of a Dennis Kozlowski or a Kenneth Lay that is just of a huge magnitude that has impacted many, many people.
Right.
I don't believe that Martha Stewart's case had a dramatic impact on many individuals, but she is a very well-known celebrity in this country. And by making her an example, I think that it is a wonderful deterrent for individuals. And so the comment made was that this is not a cost-effective use of the SEC funds.
Yep.
Quite to the contrary, I think it is an excellent use of funds because of her profile.
That's an excellent point. Let me take it to our guest, Damon. Thanks for your call. Robert Weisberg, how about it? Ultimately, whatever the correct message, as you see it, might be here, do you think this is a big bang for the buck for an under-resourced government that doesn't have the bucks to go after the really big, complex cases, or not?
Well, the caller is certainly right that the SEC may not be funded as well as it should be. But the U.S. Department of Justice is pretty well resourced, and it plays the major role in the criminal cases. Now, mind you, the government is having no trouble, or very little trouble, prosecuting the bigger fish that the caller is talking about. The SEC may not have a big enough budget, but it can get extra funds when it is necessary to do the investigation for a big prosecution. I don't think the SEC budget had to supply all the money for the zillions of dollars of investigation that finally led to the indictments of Ebbers and, Mr. Skilling.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's sort of right, but I think it misses the point.
Well,
the government can still get the people it wants, at least on criminal charges.
Well, we've got it. And meanwhile, at MarthaTalks.com, there's a fascinating chain of letters put together by the Martha Stewart people of supporters. There, here's Gene Collins from Monrovia, California, bringing light to Martha tonight. My favorite Martha moments are the segments with you and Miss Piggy. When things get back to normal, I hope you will find the time to have Miss Piggy on one of your shows. It could be a long time before Martha and Miss Piggy are on the air. But what a day. Fascinating. Robert Weisberg in Palo Alto, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Robert Weisberg, professor at Stanford Law School. David Skeel, professor of corporate law, University of Pennsylvania, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you very much.
And James T. Madour at Newsday, thanks for bringing us the business angle on Martha Stewart tonight.
It was a pleasure being with you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.